From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, earlier today, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi filed a massive $3 trillion coronavirus relief bill with nearly $1 trillion earmarked for local governments. Here's a catch. It doesn't have to be for expenses related to the coronavirus. It can subsidize mismanagement. It can fill the holes created by local governments that subsidize Planned Parenthood and abortion. The measure is scheduled for a vote on Friday, but it already has opposition. Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana is here in just a moment on this massive bailout bill. And a federal judge is refusing to rule on the Department of Justice's decision to dismiss the criminal case against Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, saying he wants to hear from individuals and outside groups. What's going on here? Is this more politics? Andy McCarthy, the former assistant United States attorney for the Southern District of New York, is here to answer those questions and more. Also, the media is now focused on shelved CDC guidelines on the reopening of America that were more restrictive than what the White House has published. So what's the big deal? Who's running the country, the CDC or the White House? We'll talk with Congressman Greg Murphy from North Carolina's 3rd Congressional District. He is a member of the House GOP Doctors Caucus. And finally, freedom will atrophy unless it's exercised. In my view, it's time to exercise our freedom. You won't want to miss that discussion later on the program. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you, the new Stand Firm app is available. It's new and improved. If you have not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, it allows you to engage in the defense of your republic. It also allows you to listen to Washington Watch if you happen to be out of reach of a station. Go to the App Store, download the Stand Firm app, or go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, 1.4 million confirmed cases later, the coronavirus has certainly had a major effect on American life. But even with the public health taking a toll, the priority seems to be shifting now to an economy that needs nationwide participation. States are saying they may need help to recover from financial woes, but is it all related to the coronavirus? Is it mismanagement? Is it spending priorities? Well, the Republican Study Committee and others say they don't want to bail out the states as it could be creating an unhealthy dependency on the federal government. Joining me to talk more about this is Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana's 3rd Congressional District. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you.
Well, this is no longer, you know, just theoretical, because Nancy Pelosi now has introduced yet another bill. This is the fifth, I believe, in the series of coronavirus-related bills, a $3 trillion bill. As I said, nearly a third of that being earmarked for state and local governments. Good idea, bad idea?
Well, Tony, there's so much about this bill that makes it a non-starter for most House conservatives, if not every Republican in the House. She did exactly what myself and a number of the members of the Republican Study Committee called on her not to do, which was to bail out blue states with a track record of mismanagement and deficit spending. Tony, I served in the state legislature in Indiana. Our state has been fiscally responsible. We've had three governors in a row, first Mitch Daniels, then Mike Pence, now Eric Holcomb, where we took a budget deficit and turned it into a budget surplus and created a rainy day fund for a time just like this. Now, our next door neighbor in Indiana is Illinois. And as I like to say it, being next door to Illinois is like living next door to the Simpsons. I mean, they make us look really good in Indiana. And one of the reasons why is because of their track record of deficit spending, mismanagement, reckless leadership. It's absolutely shameful that Nancy Pelosi would expect taxpayers in Indiana to bail out the state of Illinois. And that's exactly what you see in this bill. It's a bailout for blue states like Illinois all over the country who happen to be represented by Democrat governors, Democrat state legislatures, and their budgets are going to be balanced if she has her way on the backs of taxpayers from states like my own. I there's a lot of reasons I can't vote for this bill, but that's one of the biggest ones.
You also point out in a letter that was signed by several of you and your colleagues, you sent a letter to the House and Senate leadership, and you point out that, in essence, this subsidizes bad behavior. I'll just use those words. It's not exactly what you said. I'll quote from the letter. You said that this will send money to states that are overly restrictive in their shutdown orders. These actions have, rightfully so, received scrutiny from the U.S. Attorney General. A bailout of these jurisdictions would only serve to condone these actions and encourage economically oppressive restrictions on American people and businesses. I mean, that's true. You've got, if they feel like the federal government will bail them out, they can continue to exercise this dictatorial power for as long as they want.
And why wouldn't they, with the prospect of the federal government bailing them out again in the future? I mean, anyone who's a parent knows that you don't reward your children for bad behavior. You do the opposite. And this is a case where Pelosi and House Democrats want to reward bad behavior. But there's really a couple of reasons why this bill does that, Tony. I mean, the one is the bailout for the states to begin with, but the second component of this bill that rewards bad behavior is lifting the caps on the state and local tax deductions, which we implemented in the tax cut bill back in 2017, which means in states like New York and California, where they have really excessively high local and state taxes, their wealthy taxpayers in those states can write off those state and local taxes through deductions. And we cap that back in the tax cuts bill of 17, but this bill that Pelosi is putting on the floor on Friday would eliminate those caps and once again reward those states who have higher tax rates, which is another example of them rewarding this bad type of behavior as you've exposed.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. My guest is Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana, talking about a bill filed this afternoon. The HEROES Act is what it's called. I love the way they pick these names. But Nancy Pelosi filed the bill earlier today, $3 trillion, the fifth in a series of bills dealing with coronavirus. But about a third of this is earmarked for state and local government. Now, and it's an 1,800-page bill, so I admit up front I have not read the entire bill, but as I've looked at the synopsis, it does not appear that there are a lot of restrictions on this money. This is not simply going to fund expenses related to the coronavirus. So I want to go back to the example that you used between Indiana and Illinois. Indiana is a conservative state in which you have, if I'm not mistaken, back when Mike Pence was governor, defunded Planned Parenthood. Your
yes.
neighbor next door not only funds Planned Parenthood, but also is using money to fund transgender surgeries. So they choose to use that money. If that's what the people there want to do, that's fine, if that's their money. But all of that money is fungible. So, in essence, because they choose to spend their money on reckless items and bad public policy, in my view, then we're going to subsidize that with this money?
Yeah, we could go on and on. I mean, if you actually wade through these 1,800 pages in this bill, you'll want to beat your head against the wall, Tony, as you realize that this bill would open the door for funding to go to Planned Parenthood through the PPP program, which we went at lengths to prevent in the earlier versions of these bills. This HEROES Act, Tony, would give open the door for cash to go directly to illegal immigrants. It would incentivize states to go to all mail-in ballots and fund that, which is clearly an attempt by Democrats to tilt the election in their favor in the upcoming November election. On and on and on, you realize how bad of a bill this would be, not just because of the price tag, but the policies within it. And you quickly realize this has nothing to do with the coronavirus. This is a wish list, grab bag, open door for Democrats to placate their left-wing base. They know that this bill's dead on arrival in the Senate, and there's no way President Trump will sign it. but they're putting it on the floor and they're going to pass it on Friday because they want something to go back to their left-wing base and tell them that they did something and Republicans voted against it. Now, the dangerous part of that thought, Tony, is that this forecast to us exactly, while today it's a talking point, Bill, if Democrats won the Senate and Joe Biden was president, this is exactly the type of bill that they would ram through if they had that kind of control. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Mitch McConnell has said unequivocally, this bill is going nowhere. And at least we can rest a little easier at night knowing that.
Yeah, absolutely. But to put a finer point on some of those issues you brought forth, $3.6 billion in grants to states for planning and preparation for elections, absolutely paving the way for mail-in elections to facilitate the fraud. Then there is $25 billion, that's with a B, to the Postal Service, which is expected to run out of money by late September without congressional assistance. Now, that's a key part of the mail-in ballots, because that's a good argument that we shouldn't rely upon the Postal Service because of their inefficiency. So we have to prop them up with $25 billion. What does that have to do with the coronavirus?
Yeah, nothing at all. This is all about politics. This is all about Democrats reworking American society and their own image to tilt elections in their favor. And that's why we have to stand strong against it. I can't imagine, Tony, that a single Republican is going to vote for this bill. Our Republican leadership has been with and against it today, calling members to discourage them from supporting it. And I just can't imagine that a single Republican would vote for it. I guess we'll find out on Friday. But at the end of the day, this is simply a talking point bill for the Democrats, giving them something to placate their supporters on the left. And while I'm gonna drive to Washington tomorrow to go vote against it, I'm glad Mitch McConnell has already staked out a big no position on it ever moving forward in the Senate.
So when will the House reconvene?
Well, we get back together on Friday morning, and we'll be voting on the HEROES Act, as we've been talking about. We're also going to be voting on a very dangerous Democrat maneuver in the House to allow for proxy voting, where you can give your vote to another member who can vote on your behalf, which is another opportunity for Democrats to rework the process within the institution of the Congress to give them the benefit and seizing the moment of this coronavirus pandemic to give them advantages in the House process. And we'll be voting. We'll be standing strong as Republicans and voting against that, because that would change the precedent in the House of Representatives from how it's always operated, and it would be shameful to see that happen.
So one final question: Will this go through normal process? This will go through committee and then on to the floor for Friday.
Yeah, Tony. None of it has gone through a committee. No Republican has been consulted on either one of these efforts. Democrats are ramming it to the floor. It's absolutely shameful.
All right. Well, we'll be watching it very closely. And as you said, Mitch McConnell said it's DOA in the Senate. Congressman Jim Banks, thanks for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Great to be with you.
All right. Find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, a federal judge saying, I don't think I'm going to act just yet on the Department of Justice's request to dismiss the criminal case against Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. What's behind this? Is it politics? Andy McCarthy joins us next.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, we've talked about on the program before, last week, in fact, the Department of Justice is moving to dismiss the case of former United States National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, Lieutenant General Flynn. But a judge is pumping the brakes on the dismissal. Joining me now to talk about it is Andy McCarthy, a former assistant United States attorney for the Southern District of New York, now senior fellow at the National Review Institute and author of The Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election to Destroy a Presidency. Andy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you for having me.
All right, Andy, I'm just going to jump right to the bottom line here. What's going on?
Well, I think that, you know, this can't be disaggregated from a whole pattern of behavior, but I think, you know, basically the Obama administration and the FBI were investigating the Trump campaign, and they hoped that the investigation would continue into the Trump administration. I don't see – when a president takes office, the president's obviously got the power to shut down any FBI, especially counterintelligence investigation, because counterintelligence is only done for the president. So I don't see how, if you're the FBI, you could have figured you could continue the investigation if the president had a savvy intelligence actor who was loyal to the president as the national security advisor. So I think that the Flynn saga is more about the desire to continue the investigation of President Trump than it was about Flynn himself. I think he's more, Tony, an obstacle than the objective. I think the objective here was to sustain the investigation of President Trump.
I mean, just from the human side of this, how tragic that is. A man who dedicated his life to serving the country, a lieutenant general, 3-star general, basically life destroyed, reputation trampled upon in the midst of this just for political gain. But I want to look at the facts. And the Department of Justice, Bill Barr, had this thing thoroughly looked at. They came to the conclusion And I quote from Carrie Kupich. She said, "We do not believe this case should have been brought. We are correcting that, and we certainly hope that in the interest of true justice that the judge ultimately agrees and drops the case against General Flynn." Right. I mean, these are the ones that are pressing the case. They take it to the judge and say, look, we've looked at it now, and the evidence just is not there to suggest that this continue. But now the judge is saying, wait a minute, I want to hear from third parties. I want to hear from individuals and groups. What's that about?
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. The federal rule of criminal procedure that allows the government to move for dismissal of a case is there for the protection of defendants. So in our constitutional system, a court has no power to force the Justice Department either to charge someone or to prosecute a case that has been charged. The power to prosecute in our system is solely the president's. The Congress, when they enacted the rule that the Justice Department dismissed this case under or sought to dismiss the case under, required leave of the court because what they were worried about, Tony, was a situation where the government might abuse its dismissal power to the defendant's detriment. So, for example, let's say a case was going badly for the government. They might try to dismiss the case and then recharge it later when things might be more advantageous. Or they might continually dismiss and recharge a case to try to wear a defendant down, tap out his resources and the like. So that rule is there to protect the defendant. And this judge is using it as a device to try to basically force the prosecution to continue its case against the defendant, which is exactly the opposite of what the rule is there for. It's really quite astonishing.
Well, it is astonishing. It's a good word to use. But when you look at a criminal case, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you look at a criminal case, it is usually between the government, the United States, and the criminal defendant. I'm not sure what the perspective of third parties would be and whether or not the case should be prosecuted.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Amicus briefs are something that you frequently run into in civil litigation where you have private parties, especially litigating each other against each other, and issues come up which, if the court rules on them a certain way, could affect, for example, vast swaths of the economy or people's private rights. And for that reason, you see amicus briefs a lot in civil litigation. It's understandable because the courts are essentially making policy.
Right.
In criminal cases, there's no rule for that, and there's no reason for amicus briefs because it's just the government enforcing the law against a single American presumed innocent. And you have an American who is facing the Justice Department with its $30 billion bottomless budget. The thought that the defendant should also now have to contest against a bunch of non-parties who don't have an interest in the litigation, but in this instance, just want to rail in a political way against Flynn and against ultimately President Trump. That's really not what the court system is for. It's not what the criminal justice system is for. And it's the kind of thing that a federal judge ought to be guarding against rather than encouraging.
So, Andy McCarthy, we're almost up against a break. What do you think is going to be the outcome here? How long will the judge drag his feet?
I think it'll go on for a few more weeks because he needs to show the left his heart's in the right place, but he doesn't really have a lot of discretion to force the government to continue.
All right. Andy McCarthy, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate your insights on what I think is a very important case.
Thank you.
All right, folks, find out more about Andy, and he writes a lot. He's a Fox News contributor. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. All right, now the left is harping on the fact that the CDC guidelines were shelved and the White House put out their own guidelines that weren't as harsh. I mean, who's running the country, the CDC or the White House? Who was elected? We'll talk with Congressman Greg Murphy next. He's part of the GOP House Doctors Caucus. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I don't know if you, we talked about this extensively yesterday, and you may have seen the hearing, but the Senate had a hearing yesterday on COVID-19, the coronavirus, and one of the issues that was brought up was a report by the Associated Press that they had obtained a 63-page document of guidelines that were presented by the CDC on the reopening of the country. And, of course, they were making issue out of this, and the left is, the media is making an issue out of it, that these guidelines are more restrictive than what the White House actually put out on April the 17th. Now, the White House, they're saying that they shelved the CDC guidelines and put out their own. Well, they used parts of them, they put them out. But the question is, who's running the country? Is it the CDC or is it the president that was elected? Joining me now to talk more about this is Congressman Greg Murphy. He represents North Carolina's 3rd Congressional District, and he is a member of the House GOP Doctors Caucus. Congressman Murphy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good evening, Tony. Thank you for having me.
So I'm just going to put it out there as best as I know how. I mean, the CDC, I mean, this is their focus. They're focused on health care. But the White House is focused on the whole nature of running a country. And so is it any surprise that they look through the guidance, they take part of it, and they put it out? They don't put all of it out. Is that a problem?
Personally, I don't think so. Let's look and see what the key word is, and that's called guidelines. Guidelines. We get those in medicine all the time, and they are general recommendations that are to be used to adapt to certain circumstances. And that's what the administration, that's what the president's done. We as physicians sometimes get narrow focus into just specific aspects of disease. And that's what the CDC does. That's what they're doing. They're honing in on an infectious disease. But the president and his administration have a responsibility not only to the health of the country in a medical aspect, but to the welfare of the entire country. And that means getting back to work. That means the psychological aspect of getting out of your home. And so it's a big picture kind of thing. You know, you can have one narrow focus, and that's fine, but you have to be able to look at the big picture, and that's what the president and his administration are doing.
And that's what we want the CDC to make, those very focused, narrow prescriptions, guidelines, suggestions, because that's their role. That's what they do. But then the president has to take that and mix it in with everything else. So my beef is not with the CDC. I think they're doing what they should do. I think they'd be a little more efficient, but they're doing what they're supposed to do. The issue is with the media. That's all of a sudden saying, oh, whatever the CDC says, whatever Dr. Fauci says, that is what we need to do. I mean, that's, to me, that's absurd.
Well, I agree completely. You know, Dr. Rand or Senator Rand pointed out yesterday that Dr. Fauci is just one physician giving his an opinion about things, and that's great. We have a lot of times that a lot of us physicians and surgeons, we don't agree with one another. So, again, it has to be taken a little bit with a grain of salt. I will tell you there are oftentimes different personalities that go into different types of medicine. I'm a surgeon. I'm pretty direct. I'm pretty much see a problem, deal with it, and move on with it. Infectious disease doctors tend to be a little bit more doom and gloom about things. And, of course, they want to play the worst-case scenario because that's great. But usually the truth is somewhere between, and that's where I think this nation needs to go.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your home state of North Carolina. You have a Democratic governor, and your state still in this basically stay-at-home lockdown, whatever you want to call it, until May 22nd. So it's still ongoing there in your state. I mean, how's that working out?
Well, I actually spoke with the governor this afternoon and have expressed my concerns really for the last 4 months. And that's one thing that, I get to do because I'm a doctor and I can't get anybody saying to me, I don't understand the data, because I do understand the data. And I believe we are being much more restrictive than what the data indicates. I believe we have an avenue that today we could open up a lot more than we could in a safe and efficient manner. I'm afraid and I'm concerned that, the Republican National Convention is in August. And I'm afraid and concerned that our Democratic governors are seeing this much more of a political issue, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but that concerns me greatly.
Let me ask you this, Congressman Murphy. The president very eager to get the economy moving again. I mean, I think he took unprecedented efforts or steps rather to slow the spread, telling people to stay, to distance, to stay at home. Of course, that was enforced by the governors. But now he wants to get the economy going again. It's time to reopen society. Do you support the efforts and the steps that he's taking now?
Well, I support the efforts that the science means that today we could move forward a little bit. There's been so much restriction on things, I believe, needlessly. You look at hair salons. Let's just take those one specific example. I'm a physician. I've been seeing a lot of patients in the last couple of weeks when we've not been in D.C. to just try to help with the backlog. I wear a mask. They wear a mask. What's the difference between a hair salon stylist or a barber doing the exact same thing? There's no difference whatsoever. So I believe, people are selectively looking at pieces of data and using them to push a political agenda at this point, which I believe is contrary to what we really should be doing in this nation. Rather than uniting, I believe it's tearing our nation apart.
And I would agree with that. I think we need to take the necessary precautions. We need to follow the guidelines. But I do think it's time to begin reopening. It's time to allow small businesses to do what they have invested, in some cases, their entire life in doing. And then I also think it's time for our churches to be able to meet again.
Amen. Amen to that. So I agree with you completely. And we need to be on the other side of the curve. We're only going to get there by opening up.
I agree. Congressman Greg Murphy, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Congressman Greg Murphy of North Carolina represents the 3rd Congressional District. He is a member of the House GOP Doctors Caucus. A lot of doctors in Congress. All right. When we come back, our freedom, it atrophies if it's not exercised. We'll talk about it. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So good to have you along for the ride on this Wednesday afternoon. The website is TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. All right, I don't do this often, but I want to talk about this whole issue. I mean, we've been talking about it a lot, but I'm going to give you my thoughts on it. And what I want to convey is the fact that freedom will atrophy unless it's exercised. And I believe it's time to exercise our freedom. Now, yesterday we discussed the Senate hearing on COVID-19 and the reopening of America. I want to play a few clips for you, just kind of set the stage for our conversation. I want to start with a clip of Dr. Anthony Fauci that has gotten a lot of attention. Here's the clip of Dr. Fauci.
What I've expressed then and again is my concern that if some areas, cities, states, or what have you, jump over those various checkpoints and prematurely open up without having the capability of being able to respond effectively and efficiently, my concern is that we will start to see little spikes that might turn into outbreaks. So therefore, I have been being very clear in my message to try to the best extent possible to go by the guidelines, which have been very well thought out and very well delineated.
Now, those are all very valid points. In fact, points that make a lot of sense. And that was the whole reason for the Slow the Spread campaign, was to keep our medical facilities from being overrun. It's an issue of capacity. Now, this was also brought up in the committee yesterday, how the, in fact, it was Senator Tim Scott. I played a clip of him yesterday and talked about the goalpost being moved, how we had all of these different projections in, you know, New York was going to run out of ventilators, and now they have excess ventilators. The only state really that hit that capacity was New York. But remember, you know, we rushed over the USS Comforts. We had a naval ship there that ended up being barely used. California, you know, there's all these dire predictions didn't happen. I'm not saying that, I mean, we've crossed the threshold of 80,000 people who have died from this. This is serious. But the point is, these projections that we've heard that have been changing have not all come to pass. And that is in part what Rand Paul had to say. So there was a, there's a lot been said about the exchange between Dr. Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci. And I know it's been characterized as this like heated exchange. I didn't think it was that heated myself. But here's a short clip of what Rand Paul had to say.
I don't think any of us are certain when we do all these modelings. There have been more people wrong with modeling than right. We're opening up a lot of economies around the U.S., and I hope that people who are predicting doom and gloom and saying, oh, we can't do this, there's going to be a surge, will admit that they were wrong if there isn't a surge, because I think that's what's going to happen. In rural states, we never really reached any sort of pandemic levels in Kentucky and other states. We have less deaths in Kentucky than we have in an average flu season. It's not to say this isn't deadly, but really outside of New England, we've had a relatively benign course for this virus nationwide. And I think the one-size-fits-all that we're going to have a national strategy and nobody's going to go to school is kind of ridiculous. We really ought to be doing it school district by school district, and the power needs to be dispersed because people make wrong predictions. And really the history of this, when we look back, will be of wrong prediction after wrong prediction after wrong prediction, starting with Ferguson in England. So I think we ought to have a little bit of humility in our belief that we know what's best for the economy. And as much as I respect you, Dr. Fauci, I don't think you're the end all. I don't think you're the one person that gets to make a decision. We can listen to your advice, but there are people on the other side saying there's not going to be a surge and that we can safely open the economy, and the facts will bear this out.
I thought it was a respectful exchange. I didn't. It wasn't an attack on his person. I was just on his person. It was a statement of fact. Dr. Fauci does not, should not have the final say, although the media has tried to portray it as such. Now, on the program yesterday, I had a member of the committee, Indiana Senator Mike Braun. He was in the committee yesterday. Here's a clip of our exchange yesterday here on Washington Watch. What the media is telling us to listen to are the medical experts. That's just one side of the coin. And I think that point was made very clear today in the hearing that, yeah, we respect Dr. Fauci. We respect the medical experts. But that's just one side of the coin of what we must consider.
No doubt about it. And Tim was to the right of me. Rand Paul was to the left of me. And if you listen to the three of us in terms of what's going to make sense from here forward, and I did like the fact that Rand Paul put Dr. Fauci a little bit on the spot, and I think you need to make that point. It would be so easy to continue that highly bureaucratic, one-size-fits-all. It would guarantee that we're going to take the economic patient and near kill it in the process, and that doesn't need to happen.
Now, I want to zero in on the statement that Fauci's recommendations, perspective, whatever you prefer to call it, is, as I said yesterday, just one side of the coin. Now, Dr. Fauci was not elected to lead the country. He was hired to focus on one area, infectious disease. Now, that's an important job, no doubt. But there is more to leading a country than predicting or preventing infectious diseases. What he does not take into consideration, and he's not paid to, and he shouldn't, is the adverse effects of an economic downturn, as even the United Nations pointed out. I mentioned this yesterday. A report issued Monday by the United Nations has predicted that the economic fallout from the worldwide coronavirus outbreak may end up killing more people than the actual disease itself, and that's prompted by these shutdowns. Now, the virus outbreak has, I'm quoting from an AP story, has decimated the world economy and threatens the lives of millions around the globe who have been emerging from poverty. Now, according to the Los Angeles Times, the economists forecast a global recession that will result in up to 420 million people plunging into extreme poverty or making less than $2 a day. The U.S. has seen its unemployment levels reach levels not seen since the Great Depression, while vulnerable poor countries consider the virus's impact on those already impoverished. Well, that's because we've told everybody to stay home. Now, what we have are those who have an orientation. Looking at the states now, I'm looking at those governors who have these lockdowns in place or these stay-at-home orders. And what we have are those who have an orientation toward more and bigger restrictive government, fueled by the media. The media is fueling this. Have no doubt about it. Now, they've seized on Fauci's one-sided recommendations and are monolithically using his view to restrict the freedoms of the citizens of their states. Now, just you can look at this ballot. Ballotpedia has a great list of the states. And by and large, the first states to put the stay-at-home orders in place were Democratic states. The last ones to relieve those restrictions are Democratic states. For instance, let me just take Kentucky, for instance, because we had Rand Paul on here. He mentioned this. Kentucky, who is a Democratic governor, has an indefinite stay-at-home order in place. While, as you just heard from Dr. Rand Paul, they've not seen pandemics. I think they've had 7,000 cases in Kentucky, which he said is about the normal of you having a flu season. So you look at these, and again, there's some outliers here, but most of the states that have had the most restrictive stay-at-home orders put in place for the longest are Democratic governors. Well, some might say to us, and when I talk about it's time for us to exercise our freedom, some would say, well, we need to obey the authorities. And I'm going to talk specifically about churches meeting once again. Some would say, we need to obey the authorities. I agree. Now, allow me to give just a brief history lesson in government. Now, some would claim that our form of government is the best form of government. We have a constitutional republic, not a democracy, as some would like to describe it. The basis for a constitutional republic is that we elect our leaders to govern based upon the Constitution. That is why the Constitution is so important. That's why we talk about it so much. It is the agreement by which we consent to be governed. It is what we appeal to as the final arbiter when there is a disagreement between the governed and the governing. Now, this is an important point. This means that a mayor, a governor, or a president does not have absolute power. Now, it also does not mean that judges have absolute power either to decide constitutional issues. The power is in the Constitution, which ultimately rests in the hands of the people. We are the ones that have the power to amend the Constitution, if we so choose. There have been 33 attempts to amend the Constitution in 231 years, and 27 of those attempts have succeeded. Now, why do I bring all of this up? Because as we've discussed, in fact, just a few moments ago, there are a number of states, primarily states led by Democrats, a party that is increasingly adopting a not a liberal worldview, but a leftist worldview. And a leftist worldview, among other things, rejects the idea of God and of universal morality or truth, which obviously influences their view of religion in varying degrees, from seeing it as non-essential, as some states have declared. Some see it as an opiate for the masses, and some see it as an obstacle to the state to be met with open hostility. Some say we are to submit to Caesar as supreme. Therefore, when a governor or a mayor says churches should not meet, then we should not meet. Now, for the benefit of those who may be not regular listeners, I have been supportive of the guidance to slow the spread of the coronavirus and believe that in times of crisis, the Constitution grants powers to the government that would allow the rare, if not unprecedented, actions that have been taken to close businesses and churches for a period of time. But as we've gotten a handle or a better understanding of the virus, and we also began to consider the other factors and threats, i.e. the economy, the moral, social, and mental well-being of communities, it is time for churches and businesses to resume with the proper health and safety protocols in place. Having said that, let me return to my point. Are churches disobeying Caesar if they meet in states like California, Kentucky, Oregon, New Jersey, or Maryland who have indefinitely locked down their communities? Well, we first have to answer the question, who is Caesar? Is it the mayor? Is it the governor? Is it the president? No. In our system of government, which, by the way, is the best form of government, considering the fallen nature of man, you know, when Jesus Christ sets up his reign upon his second coming, it will not be a republic. It will not be a democracy. It will be a kingship. He will be King of Kings and Lord of Lords because he is righteous and he is holy. That cannot be said of anyone else. That's why we have a republic. You might recall the quote of James Madison, who is considered the father of the Constitution. He said this, he said, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. In framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the governed, and the next place, oblige it to control itself. And that's why we have a republic, where we have a balance of power and checks and balances. Now, what does that mean? It means we need something that controls the governed and the governing. And that something is the Constitution. Now, the recent court decisions on churches meeting are all consistent. Most, if not all, of the actions taken to restrict religious freedom in the last 6 weeks, where court decisions have been rendered, is that the constitutional freedom of religion was violated. Now, there are several cases still pending, but the First Amendment is pretty clear. Government needs to make the case that their restrictions are necessary, which they were initially. They were. They have to be reasonable, meaning least restrictive means possible, and they have to be applied uniformly. But in our system, the only way to establish that actions are unconstitutional is to take the issue to court. Many churches need to either have action taken against them for meeting, or they need to take action against the government official who said they could not meet. By the way, exercising or defending a constitutional right by appealing to a higher authority is not civil disobedience. Fundamental rights, life, liberty, and religious freedom are not safeguarded and preserved by locking them away in some kind of legal or historical lockbox. They are defended and preserved by using them. We can declare we have religious freedom and point to the text of the Bill of Rights while our churches remain shuttered by government order. But what we will find is that our freedom has atrophied. It will be lost. Maybe not with an official declaration, but in practical application. My friends, we preserve our freedom by using our freedom. I believe governments have overstepped their bounds. The Department of Justice has spoken to that issue. Courts have spoken to it. And I believe our First Amendment must be defended. And I believe every pastor in America should be praying intently about when to open the doors of their churches, not based upon what the government says, but based upon their calling to preach the gospel. And of course, it must be done with the best of precautions, taking care of their congregation and the community. But let us not let our freedom atrophy.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.